I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Born June 25th in the Bronx, New York. He was working in radio and stand-up comedy before landing the role that would make him, at the time, one of the biggest stars on television, that of J.J. Evans on the long-running sitcom, Good Times. He went on to work in such films as Let's Do It Again, Airport 79, and on such series as The Love Boat and Everybody Hates Chris. And now he's featured in the new Showtime docuseries that explores the legendary comedy club that launched him into stardom, The Comedy Store. Please welcome longtime friend of the show, comedy legend Jimmy Walker.
Hey Jimmy, how have you been?
Johnny, how are you, sir? I'm glad things are going well for you guys in KC.
Yep. As you as well. Like, you're healthy, everything's good, you're staying safe?
That's the main thing. Try to stay safe, even though I got a long drive today. I got to drive to Palm Springs. What? I'm doing, they called me for some reason and put me in the Palm Springs Comedy Hall of Fame. I don't know how that happened.
Nice.
I'm going to do that today.
Congratulations, my friend. Deserved. You are. This docuseries, The Comedy Store, this goddamn story about you and Freddie Prinze going to kill John Travolta is the funniest thing I've heard in a long time. It's so ridiculously insane and true.
Well, Freddie, you know, Freddie's the kind of guy that he does things that you just go, oh, come on, man, you can't be doing that. And he can be a moron at times, but he's your moron.
Right.
Everybody
right.
has friends like that where you go, I know he's wrong, but he's my man. I love him.
I don't care. That's right.
So me and Freddie were friends for a long time. I mean, his whole life, whatever. And the great thing about Freddie was he had a strong, strong ego. So when he was on Chico and the Man, this is not Freddie Prinze Jr. This is the dad of Freddie Prinze, okay?
Right.
And so in those days, we had big newspaper stands in L.A. and New York. They were almost literally a mile long. And so Freddie would call, and he called me, and he says, we got to go over to Cahuenga. Cahuenga is where they had this huge newsstand in L.A. I said, what are we going to Cahuenga for? Just come over there and meet me. So I go over there, and Freddie's in his car. He says, hey, man, I'm here. I go, what are you hiding for? He says, we got to go in this newsstand and hang out. So what are we hanging out? So we go hang out for a minute. And in those days, they have each section. They have the section, the porn section, the sports section, the women's section, this section. But then they had the section where you have little magazines about show business, Teen Beat, Tiger Beat,
right.
All these little things. So in those days, you put the star of the month or the star of the week or the star of the year on the cover. So Freddie was on Chico, and what would happen is that Freddie would be on the cover of all these little Teen Beat magazines. So what happens, people would come into the newsstand, and Freddie would be standing by his magazines. There'd be like 10 of these little news magazines that he's on, these little Tiger Beat magazines. And they'd look at him, and Freddie would be standing right by with his picture. And people would say, hey, aren't you Freddie Prinze? And he said, I was just here getting my Atlantic Weekly magazine, and oh, gee whiz, I don't know how you read this. Oh, my God, could you sign it for me?
Well, okay,
I wasn't really expecting anything, but okay. So he'd stand there for like an hour, and people would go, my God, Freddie Prinze buys magazines, and people would buy the magazines because Freddie's on the cover. Freddie would be signing them, and he loved it. So next year, because every year there was different people, different hot people, because in those days it was like David Cassidy, Sean Cassidy, Barry Williams, whatever, all those people on the cover, but he was on the cover that year. Next year, he says, we got to go over to Kalanga. I said, what are you going to Kalanga for? Just meet me over there. So I go over there, and Freddie's there, and John Travolta is on all the covers
because
of all these magazines.
Welcome Back, Cotter.
And he's, yeah, the things change, you know, new people come in. So John Travolta and Freddie's going, what is going on? I cannot believe it. Why am I not on the cover? I said, Freddie, you're a new guy. John Travolta says, he's not funnier than me. He's not better looking than me. I said, well, this year he is, Freddie. And let's get out of here. Let's go. He says, no, we're not leaving. I said, what? So we stood there for like 20 minutes. Nobody recognized Freddie.
Oh, no.
So we go across the street. He said, we're going over to the sporting goods store. I said, Freddie, you don't work out. You don't do anything. What are you doing in the sporting goods store? Let's just go. We go over to the sporting goods store. Freddie buys a high-powered bow and arrow. I said, what are you buying a high-powered bow and arrow for? He says, you're going to kill John Travolta. I said, what? And he says, yeah, we're going to kill John Travolta, man. This guy, he's taking over my rightful spot. I am the number one guy on TV. No one's funnier than me. No one's better than me. No one is more known than me. I said, well, Freddie, you know, I'm on TV also. He said, I'm more known than you. I'm better than you. And I'm definitely better than John Travolta.
By the way, not to get in the middle, but Good Times was on, and you were a huge star.
Not according to Freddie Prinze.
Okay. So what happens then?
So I'm fighting with him all the way. I'm driving, and Freddie methodically is putting together this high-powered bow and arrow. Because this is where John Travolta lives. He's driving over to Travolta's house, man. And then he's got an apartment somewhere. So we hide behind the staircase, and I'm fighting with him all the way. You know, saying, Freddie, let's calm down. You know, Travolta, whatever. He says, no, I'm killing this guy. Then I'm the number one guy again. I'm still the number one guy. So he knocks on Travolta's door, runs behind the staircase. I'm fighting with him the whole way. Travolta does not answer the door. Thank goodness. So I'm trying to get the bow and arrow away from him. And he says, I'm going to kill this guy. I'm fighting with him with the bow and arrow, this and that. Travolta does not answer the door. We stand there for about 10 minutes banging on the door. I said, Freddie, we're leaving. He says, all right, we're leaving. So as we're leaving, he turns around with the bow and arrow and fires three arrows into John Travolta's front door. And I'm sure when Travolta finally came home, he was sitting there going, who fired these arrows into my door? And it was Freddie Prinze. So when Travolta wakes up today in Florida, that's what happened, John.
Oh.
It was my good friend, Freddie Prinze. And then, after Freddie did what he did, and committed suicide, whatever, which is unfortunate because we all love Freddie. Then John Travolta started doing records. He had a hit record. Then he had three movies in a row, starting with Saturday Night Fever. And my friend Alan Burstein says, if he thinks John Travolta was a star then, if Freddie had lived to see how hot John Travolta got, he would have definitely choked himself then. After he saw the Dr. Volta guy.
Jesus Christ. You know, it's, but did, I'm sure you thought of this, but God forbid Travolta opened the door and Freddie killed him, and you're standing there. You'd have been an accessory.
I'm standing there, but I would have tackled him. I wouldn't have let him shoot John Travolta with an arrow. Get out of here, man. That's ridiculous. But Freddie, and it's so strange, yeah. As I go over to the settings over at NBC, right next to the Red Fox video, and he'd be mulling around, man. I can't believe people love John Travolta. John Travolta, how does anybody get John? I said, Freddie, you know, that's it. And then we did, me and Freddie, we did the People's Choice Award. And that was the first one that Dick Clark did. The People's Choice Award is probably 90 years old now. But me and Freddie did the first one.
God.
And John Travolta was there. He says, I should tackle this guy right now. Right here. I said, Freddie, leave John Travolta alone, man. Whatever was going on. But every time we saw John Travolta, because he would come to the Comedy Store, because obviously Gabe Kaplan worked there. So he was friends with Gabe Kaplan. Obviously they were on the show, on their show together, Welcome Back, Carter. Freddie says, I hate this guy.
It's so crazy. Those the stories you just think about, like, you know, when I was talking about your autobiography earlier, your book is so good, and there's so many interesting stories. You know, this docuseries, this story comes from at the Comedy Store on Showtime. You know, Mitzi was the enemy. She was the savior. She was the reason. She was the antichrist. She was all the above, right?
Yeah, she was. I mean, Mitzi was just, she's one of these kind of people that she could, that literally destroy you. She could be your best friend, and she could definitely be your worst enemy, because she was just insane. She just did things. Like, we went for a meeting with Showtime, right, one time. I have very few meetings. But she went in for a meeting. I thought we had an idea for a show. And she goes in, and we got the whole board or whatever they are of Showtime. And she says, I want to do a show about comedians. And they said, okay, what's the show? They said, we'll have three comedians. We'll do it from the Comedy Store. And we'll call it Live from the Comedy Store, and we'll have three comedians. And I'm looking at her, and I said, Mitzi, they're already doing shows like that.
Yeah.
And she says, but they're not from the Comedy Store. And everybody looks at her like, are you insane? I mean, we have this. And my son, Paulie, will be the star of it. They go, Mitzi, we have shows like that. She says, but they're not from the Comedy Store. And she's going on like, gee whiz, this big thing from the Comedy Store. And finally, I say, hey, Mitzi, I think we got to get some stuff from downstairs in the car. And she says, what? She says, well, I don't think there's anything in the car. I said, Mitzi, we're leaving now. And I thank Steve Hewitt, who was the president of Showtime. I said, I thank you. We'll come back later once we get us. I said, yeah, come back anytime. And Mitzi's in the elevator going, no one's doing anything from the Comedy Store. I go, Mitzi, no one's ever going to do anything from the Comedy Store if you keep presenting stupid ideas that we have already a billion times. But Mitzi's that kind of person.
Yeah, and, yeah. And you drink your own Kool-Aid.
But yeah, and then, you know, she's the kind of person that saved people, like Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey, great guy, fabulous guy. Jim Carrey was a great stand-up, okay? And he said one day he did not want to do stand-up anymore. He just wanted to be an actor. So he stopped doing his act, and he just went on stage and started doing improvs. So he wasn't funny anymore because he wasn't doing his act anymore.
Right.
So people stopped hiring him, and what happened was he became homeless, literally homeless, because he wasn't doing his act. So his wife comes up to me, who was a waitress at the store, and says, do you think we have a chance? Because we're living in Mitzi's garage, man. It's tough. And I said, yeah, you guys are going to be great. Jim's a great guy. He's a great actor. Don't worry about it. So Jim comes up to me and says, man, my life is tough. I'm not working at all. I said, well, you know, you're going to be fine. I said, you know, one day, Jim, people are going to walk up to me and I'm going to say, hey, I know Jim Carrey. And people go, oh, you don't know no Jim Carrey. Get out of here. Get away from me. You don't know Jim Carrey. He's a big star. And, so, and he starts laughing. He says, oh, come on. Nobody's ever going to say that about me. I said, yeah. So he becomes friends with Damon Wayans. And Damon Wayans and him get on a movie together called Earth Girls Are Easy. And they get on a show with Gina Davis. Finally, Tina Wayans sells this In Living Color show to Fox. And Jim Carrey gets on the show. And Jim Carrey becomes a star from the show. He comes back to the Comedy Store to hang out. Okay?
Right.
And while he's there, people are asking for his autograph. And he's got a little line in front of him signing autographs. And I sneak up behind him and I go, you don't know no Jim Carrey. He could not believe it. He says, man, you were right on. I cannot believe it.
Oh.
So that was my Jim Carrey Mitzi story.
That's
Mitzi
so good.
Said, you know, you can't go on anymore. But that's a whole other thing.
It's so good, man. It's just because you met, that's where your lifelong friendships like David Letterman.
David Letterman, good friend of mine, and still to this day, I can't not tell you. This is the truth. I don't know if I told this story on the show, but this is true. David Letterman was trying to do a morning show. I don't know if you guys remember the show.
I don't know that.
And he was trying to do a morning show. Him, Meryl Markle, who was his girlfriend at the time, and my two guys, Ash and Curtis, were writing the show. And they were working on it, and they were advertising this show. They finally got it on. They worked hard, like 4 or 5 months every day. That's where the top 10 list came from. Anyway, the show finally gets on, and the show goes down in flames. And David had worked on this show, and it just collapses, right? He comes over to my house. He's depressed. He is totally, totally depressed. Literally suicidal. That's how depressed he is.
Ugh.
So I said, Dave, you're going to be a big star. Don't worry about him. He says, is that where it's just, what am I going to do? Host a Tonight Show? And I said, yeah, Dave, one day you could. He says, Carson's hosting that. They'll never use me again. And my show went down in front. So I said, let's go for a little ride. You know, we'll relax. So we go over to Tower Records. Now, Tower Records is no longer there, but at that time, Tower Records was like maybe a mile long, a mile and a half long, and they had all sorts of advertisements for records, books, movies, this, that, big billboards and everything. I said, we'll go over to Tower Records, we'll hang out, we'll chase some chicks, we'll have some fun, we'll relax, whatever. So we go to Tower Records. As we're pulling into the parking lot, they're tearing down the David Letterman Show billboard.
Oh. Dude.
Right in front of me.
That's so terrible. Jesus Christ.
I could not believe it. And the guys go, man, we got to get out of here. I don't even know who this stupid guy is. And they're ripping the side. You go, oh, no. God, this is terrible. True story.
God, but he went on. He went on to be the great. I mean, and you guys stayed friends to this day, and he always honored your friendship. And that's the thing I love. Like, I'm one of those guys, like, you know, when your friends and die. And you remember who helped and who was there. And the fact that you guys always stayed close and with all that respect, I love those stories. Because
you know what David Letterman said to me, Johnny, is almost one of the last times I actually cried. I'm doing the show one time because he put me on the show. And, you know, you do what your little comedy. Then there's a break, and you can talk during the break. And I said to David during the break, you know, when they went to commercial, I said, Dave, I know you don't need me on the show, but I appreciate you putting me on. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And he said to me, he says, Jimmy, as long as I have a show and a breath in my body, you will always be on any show I do. And it was like, oh, wow. I couldn't believe he said that to me. He was like, boy. It just made me kind of tear up.
Yeah.
He was so serious about it. It's like, wow.
That's love. Okay, that's real love. That's real, hey, man, you know, love. And you've seen it a million times. These are rare stories in Hollywood where friends stay friends based on friendship, not on what you can do, what I can do, what the network means. Like you know, most of these people would trade their mother for one shot at anything, let alone, you know.
Yes, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, David has always fought for me. He's always done well for me. I mean, I can't even whatever. But because, you know, whatever I did in terms of the old days of getting him on at the store or whatever the story is, I mean, Louis tells a story. Louis Anderson tells a story of when this is Mitzi. This is just Mitzi, how crazy she is. When Louis first came to Los Angeles from Minnesota, he was a social worker. He used to do, you know, like welfare cases and stuff like that. He worked for the state.
Right.
And he would say to me, I can only stay for like a week because I got to get back to work. I'm taking time off work to be out here. And Louis was very funny. I loved him. He was great. So I said to Mitzi, you got to put this guy in the lineup, man. He's a funny guy. And this is Mitzi. This is the way she is. She says, oh, he's just a little fat guy. He'll never be funny. And so I would get Mitzi, and I would say, we got to sit down and watch him. And finally, I cornered her in her booth and said, we're watching Louis Anderson tonight. And she watched him and says, he's a little funnier fat guy than I thought. And then he finally got on, and I guess the rest is history.
Dude,
you know, Louis did a good job. He's great.
I love it.
Yeah, those are the old comedy store stuff that would happen all the time.
See, that's just the that's what I love this docuseries. This it's called The Comedy Store on Showtime, Sundays 9 o'clock Kansas City time. And by the way, guys, I'm telling you, if like this conversation makes you feel like you enjoy that just the thought and the look into that world. Good Times, Bad Times, Our Times, Dynamite, Jimmy Walker. The book is still available. It is one of my favorite books. And I mean, I'm a fan of this stuff. And I've reread this twice, almost three times now.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never read it once.
Well, it's your story, I think, you know. I love over the years becoming friends with you because you're just so, there's so much to you that you really do hold deep inside. You're not a guy who takes compliments well. You don't look for them. You really do keep a lot of your real precious memories inside. So when you started to open up and really tell these stories, I mean, I can't tell you how much I've loved it over the years.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, today when I go to Palm Springs, I got to say a few words. I'm always stunned that anybody, you know, whatever, give me anything at all, because you got a lot of people in there with me, you know, Alan Swidell, who's a big time writer for Saturday Night Live. And like I said on my little tape that I did for them, I said they got Alan Swidell, Lorraine Newman Saturday Night Live, and John Levitt Saturday Night Live. So there's four of us going in, three Saturday Night Live. I said, I guess I'm accepting this award for Garrett Morris then. I'm the only non-Saturday Night Live person going in there, so I appreciate it.
Well, listen, I hope we get past all this business and you get back to, you know, the road and we get to see each other face-to-face soon.
Hey, thank you, man. Thank you, guys. And as usual, always good being on the big show.
I love you,
guys. And I'm glad you guys are doing so well there. And, you know, you've done a lot for the area in terms of, you know, you're one of the last surviving, like, morning crews around in America, man.
So I know.
It's showing the staying power there.
Lucky to be here, man. There's no accounting for taste. I feel the same way you do many days. I go, man, they keep sending the checks. I keep showing up.
There you go, man. All right, well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys taking time and having me there. I appreciate it.
Always, always, always. I love you, Jimmy. Take care of yourself. Great Jimmy Walker, Good Times, Everybody Hates Chris, Funny You Should Ask. He just does a lot of great stuff. The docuseries is The Comedy Store. And the thing I love about Jimmy, and Jake, and T, Greg, everybody will tell you, he was hard when we first met. He was not in a great place. He was doing radio and
I remember, he could really,
it was hard to make friends. He wasn't an a-hole. It was fine, but he was not going to open up to anybody. He'd been, you know, really hurt. I mean, really hurt.
Well, he didn't want to come in and joke about Dynamite or, you know, the show, any of that kind of stuff.
He was so typecast. And, yeah. and it made him angry. And so it really did take a long time. But, man, once you did, you're just like, what an amazing, smart, funny, his history with Pryor and Mooney and Letterman. Letterman. And just, and it just, I mean, I'm telling you, it goes and goes and goes and goes and goes.
There's so much more to him.
Yes.
That you well, you have to watch this the documentary, the series, because when they show old pictures of, and it's him, Letterman, Leno, Louis Anderson, like all these people across the board, and then they come all the way up to now, like it's, you know, Burt Kreischer and Bill Burr mm-hmm. and all those guys. Like, you see where all that came from and where it's headed. Yeah. It's actually pretty cool.
And it's and he's just such a really, he really is a wonderful person.
And he's that guy, as we find out more stories, somehow we find even new stories from him from back in the day we didn't know.
Yeah.
Just think if he gets to sitting around with even more people and who remember, you know, how like one story will spur
right.
another one from
right.
that you'd totally forgotten about. How much more you could probably
enjoy. Oh, I'd love to see somebody have to play Jimmy in a movie. I'd love to see the Jimmy Walker story because it's a long, windy road, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty great. And the best part is it's a happy ending right now. He's getting the recognition he's always deserved. He's happy about it. He's glad to be on the road. He's glad to see people, glad mm-hmm. to tell stories. And he's at that good spot where, you know, he can now look at some of the rear view and smile about it.
Yep.
You know?
He should be getting an award because he saved John Travolta.
No kidding.
That's
Greece.
A fact.
You're absolutely
you know what?
Right.
We wouldn't have had Face Off. Come on. What are we doing?
Wouldn't you love to see, we didn't have Pulp Fiction. Wouldn't you love to see John show up at somewhere and thank him for saving his life?
I'm waiting to see the comment.
Or hand him three arrows. Yeah. Here, you want these back?
Some reporters got to ask him to verify that story, oh, yeah. and then you had to come home and see three arrows.
Yeah.
Look who's talking. Yeah, damn it, home post wasn't you.
This is the Johnny Dare Morning Show.
The Johnny Dare Morning Show.
On 98.9.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.